Hello. Welcome to Syracuse Speaks, The View from the AHL, a Syracuse Crunch-centric podcast. I'm your host, Alex Ackerman. Let's get started. All right, everybody. I have an incredibly special guest with me today. It was kind of an impromptu appearance, but I definitely appreciate how he was able to accommodate our podcast today. So I'd really like to welcome my Twitter friend, Lee, who covers the Crunch on Raw Charge, my old stomping grounds. Hey, how are you?
Great. Thank you so much for inviting me. I'm longtime listener, first time caller.
Oh, that makes me so happy. That's the first time I've ever had anyone say that. That's amazing.
Yeah, no, let me say that the Syracuse community has such an amazing advocate for it with you, and the Crunch are so much better, more colorful of an organization with this podcast and with your thoughts and Twitter. So thank you so much for dragging me into the fold, because I don't know if a lot of people know, but you're somebody that is a big reason why I am where I am.
Thank you. I'm going to try not to tear up over that. Thank you so much. It's been, a long haul for me with the organization, and it's good to be in that positive of a place. So thank you. Thank you for those words. I appreciate it. And I swear I didn't pay him for that or anything.
And you're doing a fantastic job, really. I think you're a few podcasts away from us being able to pull a Hank Green, now that we know he's a hockey fan. For our Nerdfighteria out there, I feel like we could definitely, with the Orlando connection, we could talk about Solar Bears or something, but for sure. I think that would be a really interesting podcast for sure.
I have never thought about that idea, but I have to admit, now that you've put it into my head, that would be very interesting. I had my good friend Mark from Hockey Across the Pond a couple months ago try to encourage me to get Mike Angelides on or something. And as much as I would love that, I have a hard time with players just because they're on so much. And Angelides especially has been featured on so many podcasts. So I tend to stress out over what would I ask to contribute to the conversation that's going to be different than what Lucas Favalli has asked him in the past, or Dan, whatever his name was, who used to be our play-by-play and our radio broadcast person, whose name I'm blank. Oh, Duva. There we go. Yeah. What could I contribute that would be different? I don't want to have him come on and just rehash all of the old conversations, because it's just, to me, that's not necessarily what fans look for when they tune into my podcast. So having someone like Hank Green on would definitely be a different direction to take it in. And I really like that idea.
Yeah, no, let me know when we can start the campaign.
All right. Thank you. And we'll see what we can get that started. But right now, we have quite a few topics between all of the different Twitter conversations and things that we've gotten going over the past 24 hours that we can talk about in the meantime. So, the last 24 hours, 48 hours in Crunchland have been a little active and rather eventful. It kind of started with a weird, before Christmas, there was a lot of chatter about this team, the tenacity, the physical edge that they were playing with. And then they've come out of Christmas a little flat, it feels like. They had those two games in Laval where the score was on the lopsided side. They had this past weekend where things didn't work out as the Crunch wanted to, although they did, I think, fight a little bit more than maybe fans saw from the team in Laval. Just talk in general, what have you seen out of this team since coming out of the Christmas break?
I definitely think that they're a little bit out of their groove. I think it was the Rochester game that was postponed due to weather. I think that really threw them off kilter, for lack of a better term. And with Laval, they were a completely different team than the team that had won four games straight previously. Or in the five game straight in November. This was a team that was starting to get out and jump out to a lead and hold on to the lead. This was a team that didn't need to claw back into games like they were doing in November. Yeah, they started out kind of slow, but in you've said in previous podcasts, but in November they were really starting to like find their edge and know how to like re-engage the other team and get back into the game. And with Laval, they just weren't doing any of that. And so it sounds like there's a history of just weak play in Laval, but I think for this reason, for this season, it stems from that weird game with Rochester being postponed. And they, like with hockey players, routine is everything. And so you break the routine and that messed something up for sure.
That's an interesting point to consider, because last night, my best friend and I were talking about the fact that nothing has really changed with the roster. You know, Trevor Carrick is still out. I don't know if you've heard on any of the AHL live things that you've seen with Favale's broadcast as to why he's out, but he's still out. No one has really been subtracted from the roster other than the goalie rotation, which we will get to eventually. So it's strange to see the team feeling so off kilter when the roster has stayed relatively stable. But you're absolutely right. I hadn't considered that Rochester game and how the change in the schedule might have thrown the team, and not having that consistent game, that one game right before the break, might have meant a different result coming out of the break a couple of days later.
Yeah. And Robert is out too. He's been out for a few games now, and I'm starting to be suspect that maybe he's dealing with some kind of lingering injury, or, you know, who knows with the AHL. But oh my gosh, yeah, absolutely. Oh, and the other thing I was going to say is the two Lightning players that had gotten came to the team from Koepke and Myers. Like, you know, they're trying to play bigger roles on the team too, and so there's chemistry. That so I'm new to the AHL. Like, you brought me on, and so I've been paying a lot more attention to the Qs this year that I've ever done in previous years past as a Lightning fan. And what I'm starting to notice and actually be, I don't know, kind of admirable of this team is how much adversity they have to play just in constant lineup rotation, players coming in and going out, that like that plays a big role on the chemistry of the team that you field on the ice. And so those players are still trying to figure out their legs. You know, I made a comment, I don't know if you're going to bring it up, but I made a comment on Twitter that, like, it's weird to me that you have a bubble NHL player coming to the AHL and they just kind of disappear. You called it the AHL flu. Could you talk about that?
So, yeah, it's we call it the NHL flu.
NHL flu.
And it's interesting because, especially with the Lightning organization, there seems to be two different strains, to borrow a verbiage there from the COVID pandemic. There seems to be two different strains of the NHL flu. And the first strain is one we don't actually see very often with the Lightning organization, which is a positive. The player who gets sent down and just completely and totally pouts and disappears and doesn't perform. That is a strain that was more prevalent during the Columbus and Anaheim eras, because the whole organization mindset was not stressed during those two partnerships the way it is with the Lightning. The Lightning makes it very clear from beginning to end, coaching staff on down, that there's a reason why everyone who was in Syracuse is in Syracuse. And so doing that kind of pouting and disappearing act will not benefit you at all as a player. So don't, you know, and I think that that is made very clear. But the second strain I think we're finding with players like Alex Barry-Boulet, who this past weekend, I swear to God, this guy had 36 scoring chances and screwed it up in the exact same way every single time. And I feel like in that case, and someone else mentioned this on our Twitter thread too, as we were talking, it's the mental stress and strain of not being where you want to be and still having to deal with it. Because the thing is, like, Alex Barry-Boulet is second on the team in points right now. But yet there are quite a few people, as evident by an impromptu Twitter poll that I put up Saturday morning when I woke up and chose violence because I was feeling feisty about what the player you actually were referring to. Everybody on that poll picked Barry-Boulet as the player that we were talking about in this general conversation. But the guy has 35 points. He's got 27 assists right now in 28 games. The problem is he only has 8 goals. And so I think that what fans are paying more attention to is that Barry Boulay should not have 8 goals in 28 games. He should be racking up goals in addition to assists. And he has a lot of assists because he plays an incredible amount of minutes every single night. And he has 94 shots on the season right now. So the guy is shooting the puck, but he can't seem to get out of this mental mindset of, why am I in the AHL? I think he's clutching his stick too tight, and I think that he's waiting too long to shoot. He seems to have some kind of shaky confidence thing. So it's been really interesting exploring that aspect of things and seeing that the fans are also frustrated in this way, but I don't think it's the same thing as a player coming down and totally disappearing.
Yeah, I agree with you on that, in that Barry Boulay is being, I feel like, okay, so going into the season, I was really looking forward to watching Barry Boulay play because I had heard the chatter on Twitterverse was always that about his play. He was just an AHL player. He was a superstar in the AHL, but he couldn't like translate that to NHL success. And I had seen him play for the Lightning, and the things that I saw about him was he was a top six player. He was somebody that had a lot of skill, but could never translate that to the NHL. And because he was smallish and wasn't very physical, couldn't really play on the bottom six. Well, he was a defensive liability. That was another thing that I noticed about him in the Lightning, was that like anytime he was on the ice, the puck was never in the offensive zone. Well, something I've noticed about his game this year, and I don't know if this is new, but I've noticed him like on so many occasions, like making a point to back check or with takeaways. I don't know if the AHL tracks takeaways, but if you were to track him, I bet he would be up there in terms of like the league's best in terms of takeaways, because there are so many times where I see him stealing the puck off somebody else's stick. And then he's playing on the PK this year. Has he normally played on the PK?
I honestly am not entirely sure, but I feel like that would have to be new. I think especially in terms of what you brought up with the defensive liability, my guess is previously that was not a privilege that he was granted before he started working on those issues.
So there's probably absolutely something there with the clutching the stick too tight, because whenever you hear about offensive players being told to play a 200-foot game, they usually are in their head about what they need to do defensively and then try to rely on those offensive instincts to still get them points. Well, for him, it's not translating this year in terms of goals, but, he's still shooting the puck. Mm-hmm. On the power play, he's still taking one-timers. And so something I noticed earlier this year is Radish on the power play would kind of balance that out, because Radish was shooting the puck so much more. And coming back from break, I've noticed he's a little bit more timid with the puck in terms of like shooting it. I've noticed him pass off or defer to teammates from time to time on power play. So I'm curious. I look forward to seeing what he does with the puck from here on out, because prior to that, he was shooting the puck from everywhere and it was going in from everywhere. So I really look forward to seeing what Radish does today.
Mm-hmm. And Radish too, that was something, his puck confidence was something that the coaching staff had really praised before the break. There was quite a few articles. Patrick Williams, I think, was the main contributor to this, where that's one of the things the coaching staff said was that he's so much more confident with the puck this year. He's used to Tampa's systems that they play in Syracuse. He has that going for him, and he's shooting way more. So that was something I hadn't noticed as I was trying to pay attention to everybody else, but that's really interesting, because I had noticed that he's fallen down the score sheet for the American Hockey League as a whole. He still leads the Crunch, but before Christmas, he was right up there first and second in scoring for points in the American Hockey League. And I noticed he had tumbled down a little bit. So that observation is incredibly interesting to me, having noticed the other thing.
And then you factor in too that Carrick was his partner, and Carrick, who you know, isn't tearing, lighting up the lamp in terms of like goals or points, is one of the league leaders in plus and minus. And I know plus and minus, take it with a grain of salt, but he's doing something right with that pairing. And so I'm wondering too, if that's having an impact on Radish kind of taking over the number one defender role. And now he's like the veteran defenseman.
Yeah, I was just looking just because I was interested. Carrick hasn't played for Syracuse since December 7th. That was his last time before whatever injury he currently is dealing with took him off the ice, which is definitely frustrating. You know, he's still hanging around because he was at the season ticket holder Christmas party, but he has not been seen on the ice since the 7th. So whatever it is has kept him out of action for a whole month now. It'd be really great if we could get him back, because I definitely feel like he was a big part of the acceleration that we saw throughout November and December.
Yeah, he's a significant piece. He's a puck mover, plays on the power play, plays on the PK. He was somebody I was really excited to watch as the season rolled on, for sure.
Taking the conversation back to what sort of originally started this entire thing with you coming on today, I threw out three players that I thought you could have been talking about. One of them was Barry Boulay, as we discussed. Then I think it was Gage Gonsalves and Gabriel Fortier, or was it, maybe it wasn't Gonsalves. Maybe it was.
Was that Koepke? Or?
Yes, it was Koepke. And you actually said that those three were not who you were referring to. So now I'm curious, who are you actually referring to?
Okay. And now I'm going to look like a fool. I'm going to put my cards all out on the table. So I am a father of two small children. So it's very hard to pay attention to games live. So I have to watch a lot of them after the fact. So I was watching Friday night's game yesterday morning, and the first period, Philip Myers, like, just, he just looked off. He looked weird. And then, of course, I tweeted that, and everybody's like engaged with this tweet, and everybody's like, who could he be talking about? I was talking about Philip Myers came to mind because he hasn't really, he's got a few goals here and there, but he hasn't really played the style of game that I've seen him with the Lightning, that he, you know, when he's on, when he's effective, he could be a game changer in the AHL. And so I was really looking forward to him coming to Syracuse, like reestablishing himself as an NHL player going to the AHL. And then, of course, in the second period, he gets the puck on the shorthand and scores an amazing shorthanded goal. And now I'm immediately like cowering for fear that everyone finds out that I was really talking about Philip Myers.
Okay. I mean, the thing is, like, with the AHL, you've already spoken to it already. Like, it's definitely a weird league, and how the waves of players sort of finding their legs, and sometimes it really is just that they need some time, but other times it's that they're really struggling either mentally or, you know, otherwise with being assigned. And so it's completely understandable that you would see that, because like looking at his stats, you know, in 10 games with Syracuse since he got sent down, ironically on December 7th was his first game in a crunch uniform. You know, he only has 5 points. And looking through his other AHL seasons, the longest season he spent in the AHL was in 2018-19 with Lehigh Valley. And in 53 games, he had 33 points. So like you said, the potential for him to be a real game changer is there. And I feel like one of the things that could really help Syracuse, especially as Trevor Carrick continues to be absent, is for him to find some of that difference-making effort that he previously had in his career.
And he's on a 2-year deal with the Lightning. He has an extension with the Lightning. So he has every reason to flourish with the crunch and to lead the crunch and to prove his value as a, you know, a blue liner. And I guess that's why my expectations for him were a little bit higher than, say, like a Koepke, who is trying to figure out his role as an NHLer. Is that somebody in the Lightning organization saw something in Myers enough to trade Ryan McDonough away for him, first off, and then instead of buying him out like there a lot of people thought they were going to do, they signed him to an extension. So somebody saw something in him. There's some value there that's worth investing in. So it's interesting. And after he scored that goal, of course, he's elevated his play. And I've seen him all over the ice. He's skating out there like a gazelle. So good for him. I look forward to continued success for him in Syracuse for sure.
Yeah. And I was just, you know, for giggles, I was just checking out the cap situation for the Lightning in going into next season. And, you know, it seems like unless trades happen or whatever, Cal Foote might be the only player that could create a kind of space up there for like a Philip Myers. He'll be a restricted free agent in 23-24, which it blows my mind that we're currently sitting here talking about the 23-24 season, because I don't know where time went. But do you see them, just to throw, you know, a comment out there, do you see them retaining Cal Foote at any point in time? Because I have not really been able to keep up too much with how he's been doing this season, but what do you see there at being any potential space for Myers to, you know, be working towards that kind of a promotion for next season?
For next season, absolutely. I don't know about this season though. I know our friend Gio, is it Gio Fitz? We should give him a shout out. Like, he had an amazing thought, and he was the one that put it out there when Nick Perbix signed that deal, that extension with the Lightning, that was a sign that Cal Foote was on the way out. That was like his spot to lose, and he had lost it. Mm-hmm. And so, yes, like next season, I could absolutely see him like as a seventh defenseman for the Lightning. And then, you know, he's a bubble player. But I don't, you know, injuries happen. And he would be the first one called up if there is anybody injured on the blue line, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't see him going there just based on merit alone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the good news is too, like looking at Syracuse's situation, Dmitry Simakin will be a restricted free agent. The Lightning usually bring back those guys, but at the same time, I'm not entirely sure that Simakin has any kind of like future in this organization, judging from the lack of being able to break into Syracuse's lineup on any consistent basis.
Can we talk about Tyson Feist for a second?
Yeah, absolutely.
So Tyson Feist, what, a couple weeks ago or a couple weeks maybe before winter break, was sent down to Orlando. And he was having some games. He was putting up some points. And so he, like within the past week, was recalled to Syracuse. And I was thinking, okay, here we go. They're going to give him a shot. And he hasn't like really stepped into any of the games.
Yeah, I wonder if, so, you know, sometimes Syracuse, just like the Lightning does every now and then, just has a couple players hanging around just in case. And I also think that when they get into those situations where they're really heating up in the ECHL, they want them to be in the AHL environment and be getting the benefit of having the coaching staff working with them so they can really see what they have. I wonder, as you know, the Trevor Carrick, as Carrick continues to be out, I wonder if we'll see him get in at any point in time. Because it is also a shame when a player has a groove going on to then kind of yank them out of that groove and not really use them. That's one of the frustrations of being in the AHL, is usually the players that get recalled are the guys that are performing well, and then they sit
right
for however long it takes. So
right, right. And that was why I thought Jaden Durow, I think it's Durow, was sent to Orlando, was to get the ice time. So because he, you know, kept getting that healthy scratch. So they kind of traded him for Sean Element. And Sean Element has been a breath of fresh air for the Crunch this year. I mean, he's looking every bit, you know, the, I don't know, the grinder, like bruiser that the team really needs and that they could throw out there and stand in front of the goalie and score some goals.
The physicality of the team this year is something that has been relatively surprising, just because it's definitely been something that's been absent from previous Crunch teams overall, I would say, you know, there PC Labrie has been back on the team for a little while. He was on the team in the beginning. Obviously, the team that came in 12-13 had a lot of players on it that were willing to play that physical game. But having someone who's a true like middleweight guy in the American Hockey League has not necessarily been a role that the Lightning has looked for in their AHL team recently. So it's been very interesting to hear the chatter around the arena when it comes to Element, because a lot of people have been impressed. And that physical game is something that really jives more with the Syracuse fan base, especially from the early years with Vancouver and with Columbus and sort of the rough and tumble years of the AHL. You know, as much as it's good to have teams that win, and I personally appreciate the shift in philosophy and play that we have seen since the Lightning has taken over, I do know that there are fans who miss that to you know, say that element of the game. So having him play that role has been really refreshing this year.
Yeah, and it also probably goes to why Dumont's had so much success with the league or with the team and has been around so long, and why the community has really embraced him and, you know, that whole nine. Because he's a real leader on the team, but you can't expect him to continue fighting for the rest of his career. And right now he's starting to show his offensive upside. So, yeah, no, I really appreciate the physical element of this team, especially because it's something that really drags them back into the fight, drags them back into games. And I'm not a huge fan of fighting in hockey in general, but how physical this team is and how they stick up for each other, it's normally good.
Gee, I wonder where the conversation's going to go next. So last night, the Saturday, January 7th game versus Rochester, saw some activity happen at the end of the game. And to be fully honest, there's been a lot of chatter on my Field Pass Hockey Twitter account, FPH Crunch, about what happened and who should get penalties and who shouldn't. And the thing is I missed the entirety of everything because where I sit in the arena, there is a corner of the ice that I cannot see at all. Ever since we started sitting in our section, my best friend and I have referred to it as magical mystery corner, because stuff always seems to go down in this corner and we can't see it. So I have no idea what happened, other than the fact that I know there was sort of a really miniature goalie fight that occurred. But other than that, I have no clue. And I don't usually comment on penalties just because I don't like those kinds of verbal sparring with people and I don't find them to be helpful. But Jack LaFontaine, who is up from the ECHL, he is the organization's fifth, and he was relieved Max Legace last night. I don't know why Legacy started. He was hurt the night before. I have no idea what they're doing, but besides the point. And at the end of the game, he was on the bench because the sixth attacker was on the ice, and he left the bench and attacked, or I don't know, got involved with, or somehow, or got attacked, I'm not sure, Malcolm Subban, who was the other team's goalie. And then other stuff happened. And you and I are on the same page with what LaFontaine did. So tell me a little bit about your thoughts there.
So I also don't know exactly what happened or what transpired, other than there was a bunch of people that came together in the magical mystery corner. And so I do know Jamel Smith was in the thick of it. I know he did not look very pleased. And I didn't even realize Subban was skating over until I saw LaFontaine skating on the ice, and it didn't even register to me that he should have been off the ice because there was already a six man on the ice for him. So I saw him and I immediately thought, okay, he's trying to get in good with the dressing room. He wants to make sure that he's supporting his teammates and that there isn't this, I don't know, unfair advantage. Would it be an unfair advantage if a goalie attacked a skater? I don't know.
I've only seen it happen, I want to say, two other times. Once was against Rochester back in 2008. And Carl Gehring was in net for the team that night. And Carl Gehring is 5'8". So John Morasty, who was on the team at the time and was a legit heavyweight in the American Hockey League, was not about to let Gehring get into a fight. So he kind of handled things for him. But and then the other time was probably against Alexander Picard towards the end of the Columbus organization. Justin Peters, I think, was who he made very angry. And in my opinion, goalies have a little bit more of an advantage over forwards and defensemen just because they have more gear. And
right. So that blocker could be brutal for sure.
Yeah. So I feel like it would be an unfair advantage if a goaltender tried to go after just a regular skater. So I would agree with you that it would be an unfair advantage.
It's just, it's interesting because Malcolm Sabin doesn't give off the vibes as like someone that has a reputation for being like a Ray Emery, mm-hmm, you know, someone mm-hmm. who was what are the boxers called? The Silver Sluggers or whatever they're called. Ray yeah. Emery was like a professional boxer. So,
yeah.
And a goalie. So yeah, whatever. So I saw LaFontaine skating on the ice and I went, okay, that's good on him, you know? And then I thought about it for a second and there's all this chatter about Legacy being injured. And so, and you know, Ulnefeldt's out with what is assumed to be an injury. And I'm thinking this is this kid's opportunity to grab hold of the net, you know, like, and he's been playing well up until this point. Don't jeopardize it by getting injured or now like there could be a suspension for coming off the bench. You want to have smart IQ. You want to have high IQ players. And that didn't strike me as a high IQ move.
Yeah, it's a tough situation. And there's a lot of like philosophical takes on it. But as someone who is very concerned about the health of Syracuse's goaltenders right now, because I have no idea how Legacy started that game Saturday night, because Friday night, the end of the third period, the entire overtime period, the shootout period, and then waiting for the three stars after the game in the tunnel, because I sit right across from the tunnel where the Crunch come out, he couldn't keep himself standing upright. I don't know if his back was spasming. I have no idea what the issue is. And again, as you alluded to earlier, the AHL injury reports are nearly impossible to come by. So I have no idea what the issue was, if it was cramping, if it was seizing, if he tweaked something, pulled something. I have no idea. But all I saw was that this was someone who couldn't stand upright for longer than a couple of seconds before he had to bend over and hunch over onto his own knees to support himself. So like, I don't know why they then turned around and had him start Saturday's game, especially since LaFontaine, as you said, had done pretty well in the game action he had seen for Syracuse. So now that, you know, Legacy might be out for who knows, and it'll be interesting to see who starts today. So the Crunch plays at Hershey in a couple of hours, and that'll be definitely a storyline to be watching. I feel like we're out of goalies.
Right. Who's the emergency? Who's the e-bug for the Crunch?
It has been historically a hockey coach from, I think, CNS that generally suits up. But I don't think he's ready for primetime action here.
Right.
So, you know, and I mean, there's usually a lot of goalies available on the you know, minor league market from the ECHL who aren't under AHL contracts and are just contracted to ECHL teams. But at the same time, is that really what the Crunch needs to have in net right now when they're trying to find their feet after the struggles right. of the past four or so games?
Yeah, and I'm wondering if anyone on the team has goaltending experience, because, you know, like you said, with Legacy, if he's not even able to get into the net at all, like, who are you going to have back up the questionable goalie?
So right.
It'll be interesting to see what happens.
Yes, it will. there we had a couple of questions come in too about Jamel Smith and the potential of an upcoming suspension there because of some things that may have happened with the refs. I didn't see anything, and there's a lot of opinions out there on what may have happened between him and the officials or the Rochester players and the officials. I don't really know, but just in case he does get suspended, our friends at Raw Charge would like to know what hobby he is going to pick up during that time he cannot play. And I think, you know, putting it out there that I have no opinion either way on whether a suspension is coming or not. What hobby do you think he should go ahead and start if the suspension turns into a lengthy one?
I mean, I've been practicing a lot of meditating recently. I feel like that's really good for, you know, finding your balance and knowing when to embrace emotions. But I don't want to be condescending either, because Jamel Smith, I think that's one of the strengths of his play, is that he does stick his nose into the dirty business. And usually if he's retaliating or if he's getting physical with someone, he has a reason.
Yes, I agree. And I am also a meditator, and you know, I think that if that is something that maybe he feels like he needs to work on, I could absolutely see that benefiting him. But, you know, I think there's been a lot of, different people taking up hobbies. I wonder if he's a baker. Is like baking bread still a thing like it was during the pandemic on social media? Because I feel like everybody suddenly was like a bread baker for like 6 months or so during the COVID-19 pandemic. I could see that being therapeutic for him.
Yeah. What do they say? A minimum 10-game suspension for what he did for attacking the ref? Like, that's probably good enough to get a sourdough starter going.
Yeah, you know, and if that is indeed what happened, and if that is indeed what down, that's going to really suck. Because Smith has been a consistent, solid veteran presence and is currently third on the team in points. And is he tied with a bunch of other players for first in goals? Yes, he is. And one of those players is Felix Robert, who, as you mentioned earlier, apparently also has run into some injury problems. So if Smith is out for any extended period of time, that's not good.
Yeah, no, it could be the, you know, they just got to practice the next man up mentality. Like, who's going to be the person that's going to slot in his role and play that physical side of things? Sean Element has had that physicality all year, and he's got a little bit of the scoring touch. So it'd be interesting to see if he could go in there. You know, There's a bunch of players that I feel like could like fit that role. Cause like, you know, Jamel Smith is never someone that was like a top six kind of player in the NHL. He was always a grinder. He was always someone that played with speed, played with physicality. And so that could be to the team's benefit, cause give him some rest. Let him get recharged up. Let him get a little bit angry and wanting to get back on the ice and give someone else that role. I don't think that the Crunch lack in scoring. I don't think that's the issue. I don't think that anybody is complaining about how many goals the Crunch have been scoring this year. I think it's been on the other end of things.
Yeah, I think so too. And that's been a frustration for the organization, at least from a fan's perspective, for a good couple of seasons now. And I'm not sure what the answer is. Like, I feel like this season that was proactively addressed with adding Carrick and then having Myers in the background as someone who could come down to Syracuse and make a difference. So, but of course, as last season showed, your best laid plans don't often work out the way you expect. So it'll be kind of interesting to see who steps up to really sort of fix what's going on that side and what happens with the goalies.
Yeah, that's the giant question mark. Moving, no matter what happens in terms of like the suspensions or with LaFontaine, who is going to take over that role? Because so many times this year, it's been Alnefelt has looked like he was ready to step up and be the number one goalie and then unfortunately gets injured. And same thing with Legacy coming back. I mean, he looked like he was starting to get back into the flow of things, and I mean, he warrior mentality'd it out there and tried to get back out there because I'm sure they were on the back to back to back, and they probably thought the Rochester game was their best chance to, I don't know, get back up in the standings in the division.
Yeah, Hershey is definitely going to be a tough test for the team today. They're really up there in the Atlantic Division. And in my opinion, the Atlantic Division is a little bit more competitive than the North Division is this season. So to go in against a Hershey Bears team that's currently 22-8-2-1, second place in the Atlantic, I think that's going to be a tough test, especially if the goaltending situation is as much of a mess as it seems like it currently is. It'll be interesting too to see if the league moves on anything that happened, before that game today. But after Hershey, unfortunately, things don't really get much easier for Syracuse. They welcome Laval to the War Memorial on this upcoming Friday, which maybe that could be some good time for revenge, but again, there's a lot of roster things that are currently in flux, so who knows where that's going to go. And then Syracuse faces Lehigh Valley, Utica, Wilkes-Barre, Scranton, Utica again, and then Utica again, and then Utica again. Oh, sweet God. Gotta love the AHL schedule when you're Syracuse. So, anyways, lots of big competition coming out of the Atlantic in the coming weeks, and then rivalry games between Laval and Utica. So, do you see a point where the Crunch might be able to turn this around, might be able to use any momentum, or are they really going to have to like buckle down and grind out some wins here in the style that maybe they were using in November?
Well, I mean, I you talk about the Utica games and how they face them like four times in, five games. I see that as a net positive. I see that as a way for them to prepare for a potential playoff division where they get to see the same team over and over again and kind of get a feel for that like taste of playoff hockey. And they need the points. They need to start playing playoff hockey. They need to start playing like their season depends on it because there's question marks in net. The blue line has been a huge question mark all year, with the exception of the scoring from Radish. And so, to your question, I mean, it has to start with I don't see them coming out of the gate after a back to back and playing amazing hockey against the number one team in the league with the Hershey Bears. Like, I just don't. And especially with who's going to be in net. So I think it has to start with Laval. It has to start with the people in the games remaining within your division. And you have to win those games because, ultimately those are going to be the teams that you're probably going to end up playing for the playoffs towards the end of the season.
Ugh, God, I hope we don't end up playing Utica in the playoffs. Okay. I do know what you're saying though, and that's always it's going to eventually happen. There is no way that Syracuse is going to avoid that matchup for the remainder of its, time. So it's something I'm just going to have to get used to personally, but I do not value that prospect, especially just with the animosity between the fan bases and I don't know, but
I
I
love this
do,
culture. I love
yeah.
this culture of learning about Syracuse and the rivalries and the region because I'm a total outsider living in Orlando, Florida, and being completely naive to the North Division's like politics or the history of the North Division. So that's where my perspective is. Utica's second in the division. Where did they come from? Like, how did that happen? Are they on a they're on a bit of a roll. So that just goes to what I was saying before. Like those games against Utica are going to be 4-point games each because it gives them a chance to kind of leapfrog a team that's ahead of them in the division.
Yeah, and going into this weird little stretch, the Crunch was like tied for second place in the North. So they've slipped a little, but the North is so close right now that any run in any direction could drastically change where everybody is. So, you know, that's also something that I think does need to be considered from a Syracuse perspective, that you alluded to it. They're really playing to sort of save their season at this point in time. We're approaching that midway mark. The AHL All-Star game is coming up. And although I love the fact that Dumont is going to be the captain of the Eastern Conference team, I am sure he's probably a little annoyed that he doesn't get the rest.
Well, he got it in the early part of the season.
He did. He did. And I'm very proud on his behalf that he received that honor, you know, especially since generally I think they try to nominate players that are in the home city that it's taking place in. But with Dumont's history with the Montreal organization, and just the fact that you can't deny he has had some incredible times, you know, with his own personal play over the past couple of seasons, it's a huge honor for him, and I'm really, really excited to see him get it. And, you know, it will be interesting to see where Syracuse's second half of the season takes them at this point in time.
Yes, this is the time when the Ben Grew coach team should be flourishing, finishing strong, for sure.
Yeah. So, Lee, thank you so incredibly much for coming on today and for making time for the pod. I really appreciate it. Why don't you take a couple minutes just to tell everybody where they can find your stuff?
Yeah, sure. So I'm on Raw Charge. I do weekly recaps every Monday morning at 9 a.m. And I'm also at Dangle Doppler on Twitter for reasons.
So you will always be welcome to come on up for a game. Should you want to see anything in person, I would be happy to host you up in Syracuse. And I really hope you enjoy the rest of your Sunday.
Thank you so much.
I think that will do it for this week's episode. As always, thank you so much for listening. I'm open to interactions and feedback, so please feel free to get in touch with me over Twitter. My hockey Twitter is FPHCrunch, FPHCRUNCH, and my personal Twitter is Allovimo, Allovimo. My personal Twitter is protected, but if you want to send me a follow request and I can see that you're a hockey person, I would be more than happy to go ahead and add you over there. Before we go, I'd also like to thank Purple Planet Music and Kevin McLeod for providing the royalty-free music heard in this episode. Keep taking care of each other out there in Crunchland, and I will see you next time.